Welcome. Welcome, everyone, to 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back. I'm Mike Nelson. Connor, are you there?
Hey, Mike. Yes, I'm there. I am back. I took a trip to Iceland, but I am back.
Great. We will talk about that momentarily. We have a great show. We have, of course, the dumb sentence of the week coming up, and boy, oh boy, we don't share this with each other.
No.
Mine, I think, is quite a doozy, but you, I know you have a different one. Without peeking, we made sure we didn't pick the same sentence. So dumb sentence of the week coming up. A lot of stuff to talk about, but let's get to, first of all, should we bring them up to date on the plot?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
I think
until we'll go through chapter by chapter. But
yeah, so, I mean, we left off last time with him entering a chat room, which, you know, had me on the edge of my seat the entire time I was gone. And then he meets with the arch-villain, Nolan Sorrento, the leader of IOI.
Yes.
Who proceeds to make various offers, which are vaguely vague threats, and those threats end up paying off when IOI blows up our hero's section of the stacks.
Yeah, in a most heartrending and gruesome. No, well, it's a shocking depiction, which we will get to soon.
So yeah, then he's forced to sort of alert all his other buddies in the Gunter community that these guys are who they assumed were really evil guys are in fact really evil guys. And then he goes on the lam. He assumes a new identity. He gets the hell out of Dodge and moves to the glorious technological realm of Columbus, Ohio.
Yep.
Where he's
the fastest growing city in the United States, right?
Yes. I haven't looked it up, but there must be some personal connection. He must be from there or have gone to Ohio State or something. Anyway, then he's free there to gunt in peace and pursue his romance with Artemis, which unfortunately does not go. It's going smoothly for a while, but it encounters some rocky turf.
Artemis / Chuck, but we'll also get to that. So Connor, you went on an adventure. You went to Iceland in the to escape this book, which I thought was a little extreme.
But unfortunately, I
found you and collared you back into this. So you had the experience of you tell me about the eating experience.
So this is why, you know, I would have just strapped on the Oculus and taken a virtual tour of Iceland. It really, you know, I had a wonderful time. Me and Lauren went there and had wonderful experiences and saw beautiful things and felt the mist from waterfalls on our faces as we enjoyed them by ourselves. You know, so it would have been exactly the same to do that as a virtual reality experience.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No matter what your rig was, you can get that.
But the one thing that you couldn't really capture on a virtual reality experience was eating fermented, aka rotted Greenland shark.
Yes. And what is the pronunciation? I don't even want to attempt it without it looks simple, but I feel like I could really screw it up. What is it called?
It does look simple, and I think I got it, but I meant to look it up this morning because I wasn't sure. It's written Hakarl. So it is to the Americans, they're all going to pronounce it Hakarl. But I think it's closer to like Hackerel, mackerel almost. The woman who gave us the tour of the facility where they let the shark rot, essentially, it's the rotting facility, pronounced it that way. And the reason I went to do this is because I posted this picture being like, oh, haha, why am I reading this book on vacation to our Facebook page? And the guy who beat me on Jeopardy last year, Pranjal, follows the Facebook page, and he sort of challenged me to go out there and eat some of this Hakarl. And that's not you know, 5 years ago, that's not a sentence I would have predicted was part of my life. anyway, so I was like, oh, when am I going to have the chance again? We went down there, we tried it, and, you know, it's not good. He said it was better than reading Ready Player One, which is a bold, bold claim because it has a taste that sort of stays with you. You know, you think about it for the rest of the day.
Oh, okay. It's one of those. It's kind of like the we did a little Riff Tracks challenge. There's a Korean food which I'm reliably told by Koreans they don't eat unless they do some real dressing up of it, is the silkworm pupa in a can.
Okay, yeah.
And we ate that at the Rift Tracks facility with all the Rift Tracks people. And that one stayed with me. Like, I can still summon up the basement-y flavor and sort of shudder, you know, after all these years.
Yep.
So is it like that, that kind of ammonia?
Yeah, oh yeah, pure ammonia. And that's what, if you don't let it rot, it will kill you because of the ammonia and the urea, which I believe is just, you know, is uric acid. It has to be related.
Pee.
To,
yeah.
Yeah, sure. So I would think about it later in the day. It was like the first time I ever got hungover on tequila. You know, I would think about what tequila smelled like and I would want to go vomit. It was like that. But so here's the thing. So Ready Player One, I had it in the car the whole time with us. I didn't really pay much attention to it, but it was there. I picked up a small portion of Hakarl to bring back for you to taste as a...
Oh, thank you.
It's not tinned, but it's definitely a weird fish. And so we picked it up at the facility. We're driving around, and then all of a sudden, 20 minutes in, I was like, what's going on? Like, are we burning tires? I was, you know, I had only brought like two layers of sort of long underwear to wear, and so I wasn't washing them. I was like, is it me? You know, and
oh, dear.
Lauren was picking up on it, and neither one of us wanted to say, it is obviously the rotting shark that we just spent an hour talking about how bad it smells and tastes that's in the back of the car. So it was vacuum packed. It had been frozen, but it was just instantaneously permeated the entire experience. So we dropped off at a gas station and threw it away.
Oh, man. Well, I missed out, but
so Ready Player One did not reek and force us to get rid of it. So I'm going to give the nod to that. Sorry, Pranjal. It is. I think that the book is still ahead in that department.
Well, we'll see, won't we, as we dive into it here.
Yeah.
So our hero, he goes to see Sorrento. Oh, wait, we have to do our fanfic or real fic thing.
We have to do fanfic. Yes, let's do that. Let's do fanfic or real.
And I have a confession. I didn't find any.
Okay.
I have one for next week that I've got sort of teed up, but I don't have it here. So, yeah.
And now I bet they bitching because my flow switching, trying to tell me what to write upon some fanfiction. Can't they just be happy? I no longer have to face eviction that I'm living on my life. I'm living on my inner vision.
Yes, indeed. It's time for fanfic or real fic. One of our most popular departments, I think.
It was, and a lot of people wrote in to say that they got fooled just as badly as we did last time. So,
All right, I'm ready. So you're challenging me. I don't have any this week, but you have a number of them.
I have three, and so I'll go through them all, and then we'll just do one by one whether you think they're something that actually came from the book or something that some weirdo wrote on the internet.
Okay, and to be clear again, we did not read ahead. This is not cheating. This is all happening real time. I do not know.
Right. So here is the first one. Family Ties is playing on the TV. It's one of the earlier shows when it was still at its peak, in my opinion. As I start to walk around, I notice H on an arcade cabinet playing Ms. Pac-Man. If it isn't Mr. Puckman himself. H chuckles and says, yeah, go puck yourself, Scott Pilgrim, referring to the movie Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, man. Oh, that is tough because that is pitch perfect. And yet, is it too perfect?
All right. Well, think about it.
Okay.
And we'll move on. The second one. It was time to elect the president and VP of the Oasis User Council, but that was a no-brainer. Like most Gunters, I voted to re-elect Cory Doctorow and Will Wheaton again.
Ooh. All right. Should I declare now or should I wait?
No. We got one more.
Okay.
It's my birthday today and I'm 33. That means only one thing. Bring it in, guys. Every character from every game, comic, cartoon, TV show, movie, and book reality come in with everything for a huge party.
Well, I think that, oh boy, okay. So any one of them could be either real. They could all three be real, right?
Yes, they could all be three be real.
They could all three be fanfic. Okay.
So start with the first one. Family Ties, Puckman, Scott Pilgrim.
I think I think that that's fake because of the Scott Pilgrim. I don't know. That
yes,
one's
it's fake.
Okay.
Yeah. It sort of has the family ties. He's already sort of mentioned that. This is you know, this seems like it would be hard for this discussion not to have already taken place, given the stakes that we've learned.
Yeah.
All right. The second one, time to reelect the president and VP. He voted to reelect Cory Doctorow and Will Wheaton again.
I don't think there's any way he would have brought that into a book of fiction, is there? I say that's fanfic.
That is correct. That is That is real.
Oh, no.
You were incorrect. That is an actual portion. It's in the next chapter. I just flipped ahead and that was there.
Holy cow.
So, so that's, I don't really know how it plays in. I just sort of saw those names and I was like, well, this has to be, but that reads as fan fiction-y as you get, in my opinion.
Wow. Yeah. Well, threw me off.
And people have pointed out that Will Wheaton reads the audiobook of this. So that must be an interesting little circular thing to have happen.
How do you wink with your voice, right?
Right. And then the last one, it's my birthday. Bring it in, guys.
That's got to be fanfic.
That is fanfic. I don't even know if it counts as fanfic, but it is a famous forum post by Game Master Anthony, who posted that on a forum, and people have compared it to Ready Player One, and that every character from every game, comic, cartoon, TV show, movie, and book comes in for a huge party. People celebrate his birthday on his anniversary of that post every year, so it's kind of just a funny thing, but it is sort of Ready Player One-ish, and hey, just everything. Everything's part of this. Every character. You know, the guy from the Pelican Brief will be here. Every book.
Well, there's a bunch of stuff coming up, I mean, that we'll cover in this that you just go like, no, there's no way he's just wedging this in now. And he's still making reference to, I watched every single episode.
Right.
I'm like, there's no time. There's nothing left of every single episode. You're done. You're tapped out.
Right. Well, yeah, let's get to it. Let's get to the actual book content. So,
yeah. So he goes to the meeting with Sorrento, who is the super evil guy from IOI.
Yeah. And meeting is taking place in a chat link.
Yes. Explain that. I confess it had been a while since I read. I made the gap between I always cram. I admit right now I cram the reading. I don't do it for pleasure. So what is the chat link? How does that compare? So, how does that work in a virtual reality?
He's going into the meeting with the evil guy. So it's a big dramatic moment. And he starts that dramatic moment by minutely parsing the difference between a chat link versus a chat room, which I was rapt for. A chat link is, it's different. Your avatar wasn't actually there. So it appears to other avatars as a slightly transparent apparition. And they're used mostly for business purposes.
So business people like sort of ghosts of themselves wandering around.
I guess so. And it means, I guess, that his avatar cannot be killed. So there's a chat room. There's a chat link. You can talk to an avatar in person, which I guess is like when they met in the cave, him and Artemis. And you could actually be in the office in real life together in the IOI offices. So there's these four levels of things. And it reminded me of when you talked about when Herman Melville would sort of just devote 25 pages in Moby Dick to talk about various kinds of sailing knots.
Exactly.
Yes. It's like, why do we need to know why did you even invent this? Like, a chat room is fine. We've all experienced that and understand how it would work if you were doing it as a physical presence in Second Life. So it was off the rails quickly, in my opinion.
Yeah. But it, for me, it contained an amazing sentence. And so I looked into this, and this was an exclusive I should have talked about, but I'm glad that I was able to spring this on the audience. An advance, a copy of the movie, some cut scenes. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, absolutely. And it came from... Well, you know how in movies they expand on the universe in ways that you find either interesting or you're like, boo, that would never happen. Sure. Or they, cut out things that you really like.
Right.
This was a moment where I guess Spielberg thought this was something that he needed to expand upon. And here it is. It's when he goes to meet Sorrento in the office. And Sorrento says to him, you know, you're bright. You've got cojones, two qualities I greatly admire. Yes. That was kind of his. And then it says, we kept walking. A few minutes later, we arrived in Sorrento's office. So there's kind of that missing 2 minutes there. And I think that Spielberg, I think that sparked his imagination.
A blank canvas.
Yeah. So I was able to, I logged on to a chat link and got a hold of some other Gunters. And I was able to find that scene that Spielberg, I mean, I hope it stays in the movie. You never know. It's up to editor. But here it is. It's the scene of the Sorrento Walk, as it's famously called now.
You guys have no clue where the copper key is, and you need my help to find it.
Hey, I like you, kid. You're bright, and you've got cojones. Two qualities I greatly admire. Anyway, let's go see my office.
Yeah.
This is Deb's office, and looks like she is out. Huh. Must have gone to get some tea or something. Yeah, she was here. She's in business development. She's a great gal. Moving along. Well, here's the snack machine. You see up on top, they usually put the crunchy snacks. So you got baked Lays, we got Ruffles. Then along the lower rows, it's where they keep the sweeter snacks, things like your Skittles.
Hey, look, what the hell was that back there?
What are you talking about?
You're a ruthless billionaire businessman. You corner a 17-year-old punk in your office, and your line is, I like you, kid. You've got cojones.
Look, I'm a little off today, okay? Do you have any idea the stress I'm under running a multi-trillion-dollar company when the entire global economy has gone down? It seems like every day there are earthquakes and stack collapses that wipe out more of the few customers we have left, and sometimes the electric cars carrying goods and workers into the city break down, you know? I mean, where the hell am I supposed to get spare goods and workers?
All right. All right, take it easy. But, I mean, even given all that, you can do better.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. Thanks, Wade. Thanks for speaking honestly to my mostly transparent avatar in this chat link.
Hey. I'm a Gunter huddled in an abandoned van that smells of my own excrement, but I'm also a human being. Now, come on. Why don't you try and threaten me again?
You really mean it?
Hey, don't pull a Pendergast on me. Come on. Threaten me.
All right. Gotta try to get my evil back here.
Sure, take your time.
Okay. All right. Wade, you and I, we're not so different.
Oh, for God's sake.
What?
Wow, that is exciting stuff.
Amazing. Yeah, that's going to be a great movie, actually. Yeah. My tone has changed.
Yeah, really filled in that moment. And then
who are the leads, though? I mean,
what's the name of that?
I'm not sure.
Creepy little kid is not good at all, but the villain.
He sounds handsome.
He's got an edge. He really does. He's on to something.
Well, yeah, not only the silent walk to the office that goes unmentioned, but in a book that is filled to the brim with unnecessary references or comparisons, he gets to the villain doing the utterly cliched, you know, I like you, kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially, we're not so different. And he neglects to be like, it was just like that scene in Roadhouse or Batman or the Fast and the Furious or literally every action movie.
It was just like the very things I got it from. Yes. Yes. Which he's happy to do everywhere else in the book. Amazing. I also was very appreciative of the fact that it describes how his boots clicked on the polished floor in the chat link. So his transparent avatar still has the, you know, the evil power to make his Nazi boots click on the floor. Very well done, chat link.
Yeah, and so he sort of makes him some good offers. He gives him X amount of millions of dollars to join their thing. He talks about the severe reduction in server lag he'll be able to have if he moves to their offices, which, I mean, just send my pulse pounding. It hasn't really been an issue, it seems like. He talks about how great the connections are in Columbus, Ohio, but Wade, as we know, has spent 24 hours logged in recently with no real...
No, not a single glitch. He's been huddled in the van, right? Curled up on the floor.
Yes, it's all he does, and he doesn't, like, he's not, like, we've all experienced bad internet. Like, when we went to Iceland, we spent, like, the first 24 hours being like, how do we get this SIM card working? And every time you'd switch over to the weird, you know, less than 3G thing, it would be frustrating, and it does not go unremarked upon, believe me. But he has not had any issues so far, it seems.
No, I mean, you'd think in the middle of sort of ogling Artemis's avatar, he'd be like, you know, hitting the side of his mask because it's going in and out. Like, I can't, come on, I got to keep it up here.
Right. But that's not the only good bit of technology they have to offer. He points out their Habershaw immersion rigs. And these these really seem like they're one hell of a rig, Mike.
Yes.
I looked it up. Habershaw seems to be some garbage reference to his next book. I think that's the name of a character in it. That's all I could find. Every time I see a character, like some proper noun, I assume it's got to be some thing that I just don't know. And I'm usually turns out that I'm happy I don't know it.
Yeah, I felt the same way about just the names, like Nolan Sorrento. Is that like a junior jumble of some game designers? Yeah. I assume I didn't even bother to look it up.
I think Nolan Bushnell created Atari, and I don't know who Sorrento is. And there was another one, the name he changes his name to is a reference to someone in Max Headroom, which someone pointed out to me, which is it's the name of a teen hacker in Max Headroom.
So, yeah, we'll just assume every time we see something we don't understand, just insert the word ham-fisted there. I think yes. You're perfectly fine assuming that.
Nod and smirk, and you'll have the reaction yes. You're supposed to. Right. But yeah, he's got these rigs that are just incredible that he lets you. They can sort of just have any number of people in their office controlling an avatar. So if you get to a challenge you're not up for, someone else can just tap into the rig and take over for you.
I was just, I have to say, I was pleased by just the sheer number of the word rig being represented made me just on the surface happy. Part of me wanted to just go, oh, for God's sake, he's doing it again where he just repeats phrases. But it's like, this one, as many as you need. I'm happy with these.
Once you have the mental image that I've tried to communicate to our listeners, and one guy said that he was looking at the picture of the cow rig on the inflatable cow rig, and his wife walked into the room and was like, what on earth are you looking at on Facebook?
Oh, wow.
Like, no, it's for a book about a podcast. So yeah. I assume they've separated by now, but yeah, it makes me happy too. But anyway, yeah. So he's irked by Sorrento's paternal tone, which to me, I guess meant that he thought that Sorrento was going to go out and get shot looting a liquor store.
right.
But then he's doing these things like pulling his hand away and putting his feet up on the desk, which I was just like, since the book is intended for people in their 30s and 40s, there's no way that we're supposed to think that that's cool. But there's no other indication that we're supposed to think anything else.
How do you think of this stuff through the now we're on three framing devices, right? Well, two, I guess, if you. Because he's in Oasis and he's in a chat link.
Right.
So, and then he's putting his feet up on the desk and he's doing that. Like, so his ghost business figure is doing this. And also, you have to just think about the fact that he's walking him through offices. Like, what is the purpose of that? Why go through this whole charade? It's also what I think of later when they talk about how they disguise their avatars. What do you mean disguise? You have an avatar. You choose another one. You don't just putting
That's
on hats at a hat shop or something. What is going on?
Right. When he disguises it to look like meatloaf, it's like that's you know, you've chosen a new avatar at that point in time.
Right.
But anyway, so he makes him these offers, and it seems like they're all just sort of baseless because at the very end he's just pretty much threatens to kill him, and.
Yeah.
He then threatens to, yeah, he says, I'm going to blow up your trailer. And we know you're in there, which is not true. But I guess they know who he is and they're monitoring where he lives.
So he takes a stab at it. He thinks for a second because obviously since he's not in his trailer, they're threatening his immediate family and all of his housemates. And he calculates for a moment and decides, no, they're bluffing.
Yes.
And so what's at stake here, by the way, is there, if he goes along with them, he just gets a bunch of money and fame and everything, so which he could then feed his family with. But he decides not to do that, right?
Right. And so the consequences of that are 1 minute later, they detonate a bomb, and he describes it as several stacks, I mean, collapse around their stacks. And just creates this horrible pile of rubble and flame. And so I did a little bit of math on that. So he said that a stack was 15 trailers in a minimum. There were 22 in his own stack, and 15 people lived in his trailer, which he said others were more crowded than. So if you figure that several stacks collapsing means at least three, 15 trailers and 15 people per stack, that means that at least 700 people have just died. And his trailer was full of children. It had a family of six in it.
He watches. He is near the explode. His huddled van, his abandoned van, is near there. So he does. He goes immediately to see it.
Yes, he watches it, and his immediate conclusion is, there will be no survivors. That's immediate. That's apparent. And the reaction of everyone else watching is, you know, they watch this horrible thing, and the children that they've seen sort of growing up around their community are all just been crushed and
incinerated.
And
burned. Yeah. Burned.
Yes. And their immediate response is, I bet that was another meth lab explosion.
Well, that was their conclusion after they made an attempt to put out their own flaming propane tanks with big gulp cups.
Yes.
So, right. So there was a lot of humanity there that you see before they come to that conclusion. Yes.
And just the idea of why even bother trying to pull stuff out. I looked it up. They pulled 12 people out of the World Trade Center, which was a much bigger, more horrific explosion. But they kept digging for that. The heroes did and managed to rescue a dozen people. But these people are just like, nah, well, I got to get back to whatever I'm doing in the Oasis. Not worth seeing if any of those screaming children are worth saving.
Right. But his humanity, lest you think that he's a cold person who just watches this and moves to Columbus, like we all do. he does have a lot of humanity, because later, as he describes it to H, that he basically says, then I told H what happened with the whole thing, which is another technique that he uses a lot, where he just describes to another character things that we already know happen. And H says, whoa, they blew up your house? And he goes, well, it was a trailer. So that's, and he does that gag like twice, like he's Groucho Marx or something. Yeah, they blew up my house. You actually, it was a trailer, you know, like what is, I didn't get, was that supposed to be funny or dark? Because he does it a couple times.
H is like, yeah, I heard that 6-year-old Timmy Johnson died. He was 5 and a half.
Right. My family died on Christmas morning in an accident. Your family died in a car crash on Christmas? It was a van, you know, like, well, what, this is a terrible gag or whatever, or it's just terrible writing.
Right. I personally feel kind of deprived of him going over to the rubble and holding the tattered remains of Mrs. G's house coat.
Yes. She was a most beloved character. I love how she had like three lines, like, have a cookie. I'm a person with a friendly face, and I love you. But there's no other indication. And then she just sort of summarily among the burned corpses in the stack.
Right. He resists the urge to launch into an atheist screed there. And that was, yeah. I admire the restraint.
Yeah, very much so.
Something else. So he goes on. Then he realizes he needs to alert his other Gunters about this, because they're all going to be targeted and potentially killed. But another weird moment of clarification with H was when he said, he's like, you better get on the run, man. Like, they're going to track you down. And H says, don't worry about BZ. I stay mobile. Those bastards will never find me. And his response to that is, If you say so, I replied, wondering exactly what he meant.
Yeah, that was that was on my short list of dumb sentences, by the way, good. But it didn't make it.
His words, "I stay mobile, they'll never find me," was packed with ambiguity.
Yes. Oh, man.
Yeah, it is the same sort of thing you said. He's making jokes despite the recent deaths and sounds of twisting metal. His mood is brightening at the prospect of seeing Artemis again.
Yes, yeah. Which leads then to the, can we call it the High Five Summit?
Yes, I think that's what it should be called. It's the first meeting of the High Five.
So these are, let's assemble our characters. High Five Summit, assemble.
So we've got Parzival, H, Artemis, and then Dato and Shoto, the new guys.
Yeah, and boy, they are richly drawn in this. Yes, I mean, yes. As everyone is, so he's not being unfair to them. but good heavens, that I have to admit, before we even dive into it, this chapter was just a slog. This seemed like a junior high writing assignment. I mean, a bunch of this stuff does, but this was particularly, sure. I just couldn't picture anything. It's just like people saying sort of junior high insults back and forth to each other. Like, this was not good.
No, it is. It is not. And I've got some very choice things highlighted. But I think we got to talk about Dato and Shoto, who may as well, like, I don't think you can really indicate it in print. But I think what he wanted us to think was they enter and we all instinctively go,
exactly.
Which is because they're just dressed as samurai, essentially. They're bowing nonstop. They've got katanas and other kind of weird blades. They're talking about honor.
Uncharacteristically, he goes into great detail about the particulars of them. He says, they looked pretty much the same. One looked 5 years younger than the other one. That was kind of his physical beyond them holding katanas.
I'm not offended by any of this because it's so ham-fisted, but it's pretty lazy. I can do a moment of self-indulgence, I had a scene in the book I wrote, Gone Whalin', where they encounter the Chinese sailors back in the 18th century. So there's a whaling boat. They encounter these Chinese whalers.
Sure.
And it sort of goes through a similar scenario. I was kind of impressed by that. They're meeting these guys. The captain of the American whaling boat makes them all put on these Asian robes, and they're like bowing to them and they're ringing a gong. But then at some point in time, the Chinese guy speaks perfect English. He's like, "What the hell are you guys doing? Why are you bowing every time you see us? You never bothered to ask us if we were speaking English." And it's like, well, all right, you know, if you're going to use stereotypes, there's a way to at least undercut them for the sake of comedy by making the people performing the stereotypes look like the ignorance, you know, the shoe is on, you're making fun of them and not making fun of the people who have been reduced to these stereotypes.
Right, right. Yeah, no, he just wades fully into it and there's no out on it. It's just they leave because, yeah, another richly drawn part of their character is like, we work alone, the two of them. they just say that, and there really is no other. They're kind of hitting it off, right? The party in H's basement with the paneling and everything, Artemis is just, she's enraptured by it. This is like, this is the coolest chat room I've ever been in or whatever.
She's stroking the D&D supplements on the shelf. At some point in time, she gave us a sarcastic golf clap, which made everyone laugh, which is yet another "it did" moment.
Yeah, that's impossible to believe. So the two Japanese guys, they really enjoyed that golf clap, huh?
Yes. my favorite part of this was when he's describing his meeting with Nolan Sorrento. And so Nolan had, just described the rigs to them. And so Wade is describing this. He says, the Sixers are using hacked immersion rigs. Sorrento was boasting about it to me. So we heard this 3 pages ago. They've got it set up so they can, different users can control the actions of every one of their avatars. So they can just have their best Joust players take control of each avatar during the match against Acerak. Then he says, playing through the war game simulation will be a piece of cake for them. Someone will just feed them the dialogue. And so he's explained to us what has already been explained to us. And then that frustrates everybody. But then later on, when the IOI starts winning, he recognizes Sorrento's six-digit number from his name tag, which is another feat of his memory. But then this is 5 pages later after he's explained this to his 5-5 posse. He says, I had a hard time believing he'd done it on his own. There was no way he was that good at Joust or that he knew war games by heart. But I now knew he didn't have to be. When he reached a challenge he couldn't handle, like winning at Joust, he would just hand control of his avatar after one of his underlings. And during the war games challenge, he'd probably just had someone feeding him all the dialogue via his hacked immersion rig. There is no probably. He told you that's what he was going to do. And then you told other people he was going to do that.
That is a feature of his writing that is repeated over and over again that, again, I cannot believe. I honestly think that the editor went, if I took all of this stuff out, I'd have to have him go back and try to rewrite this.
Right.
So just leave it in and that'll pad it out to 75,000 words or whatever it is. And we just have to live with this. There's no other way.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, the meeting sort of breaks up when the Japanese guy's honor is insulted, and they ring a gong and make their exit. And then they don't actually ring a gong, but I think
why not?
All their entrances and exits could be scored by that. But so then Artemis leaves to go off to do more gunting, and then H and him have a little bit of dialogue, sort of because H has been picking up on his crush on her.
Yes. And do you have, because this also was on my list of dumb sentences, do you have the description of that?
H is teasing his buddy. He just says, you know, you've got a crush on her. And he says, no, I don't. He's like, oh, come on, man. You were making googly eyes at her the whole time she was here. He did his impression of this, clasping both hands to his chest and batting his eyelashes like a silent film star.
What is going on?
So that's a reference they've just got in their quiver.
Well, it's also a reference that he's got on his rig. Suddenly you can turn into Betty Boop by, what are you right. doing? Like, how yes, do you do exactly. that with your well, little headset?
Right. And that's, you know, that's what he's referring to. He's probably referring to Betty Boop or Bugs Bunny's impression of these silent film stars, because there's no way he's talking about Clara Bow or
right.
Herbert Beerbohm Tree or like Charlie Chaplin. I just don't
the
understand.
The Perils of Pauline. He's been is another thing that he's watched every episode of.
Right. So anyway, that's how their meeting goes down. Everyone sort of leaves, I guess, with the warning that they need to be careful. And then he decides to take some action about it. He decides to actually leave town because the IOI has infiltrated the tomb and they're just marching their avatars in and out.
Yeah. Before we leave the scene at in the basement, the meeting, the high five. Yeah,
sure.
Here's I got to give you two things. This was the runner up to the dumb sentence because it goes like this, because he's explaining why they're called the high five. The very first meeting of the high five, Yeah. Said H. That's what they're calling us on all the message boards now. We hold the top 5 score slots on the scoreboard. Now wait for it. Here's the next sentence. So we're the high five. So another one of his, I can't, the difference between joking and just being an idiot, there's no way to tell the difference.
Sure.
But then here's was my other question about that. Artemis shows that the IOI is going to the mound to find the copper key, right? But because she had set up cameras to watch the mound on Ludus or however you pronounce that. So how does that work? It's virtual, right? She sets up cameras? can't you just see it? You have to, there are like virtual cameras that fit inside the virtual world. So you
right,
have like, I don't understand that at all.
It must just be some virtual device that you have to purchase or acquire that lets you set one up in a tree to spy on people. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you know, it does, sure, from the World of Warcraft point of view, where you can't just do everything, even though everything is fake.
But for all the times that he's over-explained absolute garbage bullshit, the fact that he doesn't explain that there are, you can purchase cameras which aren't actually cameras that you can set up and record certain aspects of the, but this one's just, no, I set up some cameras out there. I think he just forgot that he was in a virtual world.
Well, what she's setting up the cameras to do is funny. You mentioned that, you know, this can happen, because she's setting up the cameras to watch the people, the IOI, defend the tomb, and they have started employing just a bunch of literal wizards in order to do that.
Yes.
They've got just wizards casting spells all over, which is, there's a Simpsons line from season six or whatever, where a wizard did it is the explanation that the creator of Itchy and Scratchy offers the nerds when they're like, how did this happen? This doesn't make any sense. It's like, yeah, wizard did it. So he's just employing that old cliche. And my question was like, so IOI is employing these characters who act as wizards. They've got these guys manning the rigs playing Joust. So at the company picnic, like, how are those guys getting along with the guys who actually went out in the real world and set the bombs to detonate this 700-person killing trailer? Like, these hardened military guys who are, like, on the ground killing people are then being like, oh, there's the guys that play Joust. Like,
right. They're like, hey, is there any more potato salad left yes. there, Sporto? What do you do for the company?
Yes, oh, exactly.
I murder thousands. What do you do?
Yeah, I've gained 80 pounds as I played Joust nonstop for the past year.
Oh, man. All right, so the meeting is over. They disband. He goes to Columbus. He gets an apartment, right?
Yeah, he gets an apartment on the 42nd floor, which is the first of three Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy references we've got in this episode. Which,
ooh, I'm glad you're keeping track of that, because I could not.
I didn't notice that, but there were two others that were much more overt. Someone else pointed that one out to me on Twitter. It's like sort of when you see, you know, when we do a movie, like we did that movie, The Little Unicorn, and that David Warner was in that. You just see these sort of respectable actors slumming in these garbage movies.
Yeah.
You sort of you feel more bad for them than anything. That's how I felt sort of seeing a book that I really enjoyed reading growing up being mentioned in this nest of garbage.
Yeah, there was a there was a reference later on to something that I liked, and I was like, oh no. I think maybe it was a chapter head where
there was a Marx Brothers quote.
Yeah, that was it. That was exactly.
Yeah, I thought that might have got you.
Damn it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's dressing as Meatloaf. I have to renounce that whole thing now.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Both the food and the guy. But yeah, so he's got his own apartment in a place where he's going to have a much more stable connection, and that all happens pretty easily. He logs on to the, I think you jotted it down, the dark net, Leet.
Leet Haxor's warehouse.
Yes.
Yeah. Which yeah. I my note was, is it even possible on this or any conceivable world to hate something more than I hate this? and I don't know. We can revisit that.
Right. That is exact. You know, so when I used to over AOL download a pirated copy of like NBA Jam or the full version of Commander Keen, it would always have those sort of wares, and a group would have wares, and it would be alternating camel case caps and Axie Tesks, and that was in 1996. So that 50 years later, it's still the hallmark of any sort of good hacker.
Oh, it's no classic 80s, I'll tell you that.
So I thought it was funny that he wanted to, he resisted the urge to put his headset on as he travels via bus through the lawless Badlands, because he'd never been outside of Oklahoma City before and was curious to see what the rest of the country looked like, which, you know, seems like a 5-minute trip. Into the rest of the country, just like he went to the Louvre and to the pyramids would have been right. sufficient to determine that. But
right, and he's on an electric bus, so we got a little more. We're a little bit in the real world, which is always. He seems to really stagger in his descriptions. He doesn't really. He's not able to describe the world very much, which would be in keeping, I think, with the actual author that he doesn't have connection with. So he's on a bus that only goes 40 miles an hour. Over the cracked pavement, which, as we know, what's the chief use of the cracked pavement is
transporting
goods and workers into the city, of course. So he's on that route and makes it to Columbus and goes to an apartment whose sole it used to be a classy Hilton? Hotel, I believe. Yes, a Hilton.
And before the lawless Badlands took over, I just think that lawless Badlands are inherently cool. They get one sentence and then they're never mentioned again. It don't seem to impact the rest of the story, but like whatever's going on there in the real world is much cooler than going to disco raves with
game designers later.
Yes.
Yeah, but he also exactly and we never really hear how does this impact the real world economy? What's going on? So there are lawless Badlands. Like who's right. who's in charge of this? Like, how is the world so tilted that there are just millions of people playing this game, which, you know, is really reserved for the few? And but then on the real world, there's like something thrilling is going on.
Right, exactly. You know, rolling power blackouts and right. Hijacking things. But then people are still, Artemis is still going to college to obtain a poetry degree.
Right.
Which is...
And how does he never encounters the rolling blackouts, even when he's in Oklahoma City. So,
right.
Like, how come these lawless bandits aren't, you know, like... Road Warrior style, just storming Oklahoma City and just like burning it to the ground and taking everything. Who's preventing this? What? Why not?
I don't know. It's burying a gigantic lead with what has happened. And I, you know, he talks about like when he's harassing Sorrento, he's like, you want to ruin the only thing that made our lives bearable? And it's like, this has to have played a substantial role, the Oasis, in the downfall of mankind. If everyone's right. just jacking into this system all day long and not doing anything worthwhile, like it has to have been a primary cause of the society's downfall.
Right. So, all right. So he goes to the apartment. He gets his stuff. Now he's a rich. He's a 99 level within the Oasis. He's rich, right?
Sure. Yeah. He's powerful. He's you know, even though his life has been threatened and thousands of people have died because of him, he starts to get pretty arrogant and starts it would be very easy for him to not do anything and lay low and continue the egg hunt, but he just starts showing up in public again, that which would immediately alert the people that he's not actually dead.
Yeah, this one confused me a lot. He's just wandering all over and there's little things about, well, this was a non-battle zone or whatever, so I was safe here. But like, wait, you didn't put the meatloaf costume on? Come on, man. You're a serious person.
Right. The fact that he has to consistently remind you where or where not people might be able to get killed is a real failure of the universe here.
Yeah, so you're about to read a chapter that you don't need to worry about the drama. Okay,
right.
Here we go.
And speaking of drama, the next chapter starts with a 6-page chat room session.
Oh, man.
Which is great. I think this is probably when Spielberg got to this part, he was like, I'm not reading any further. I'm in. I'm sold. You know, I've got, I can do whatever I want, and this is the movie I want to make, baby.
Yeah, you know the scene where... So Humphrey Bogart is walking around Rick's place and he for the first time he sees, like, the audience knows that he's going to see her, and then he sees her and that look on the face and the sting of music. That's what the 6-page chat reminded me of. Just right. The beauty and tragedy of that is really contained within some of the best language we've ever heard.
It's Kevin Arnold seeing Winnie Cooper as God Only Knows from Pet Sounds Plays. it's just, you know, they chat and it's not like an actual chat room because no one is getting distracted and being like, oh, sorry, I was in the can or I had another tab open. No one's, you know, no one's correcting their misspellings. You know, no one's getting responding to something that the other person has already responded to.
Yeah. And it is astonishing in its banality. I could not keep my eyes focused on it. It really was like, you know, if you have to read your kids, you know, computer logs or something. Like, it's something I know I have to do. I have to see if he's doing anything bad, you know, but like, good Lord, come on, man. That's right. What this is for 6 pages.
Right. But there was some good stuff in there. He unleashes the line, the female of the species has always found me repellent.
I did note that one.
It's going to be pretty self-fulfilling once you start tossing that sort of line out.
Right.
He grills her endlessly about whether she's actually a woman, which is a major sticking point. And then he unearthed this one. Are you a woman? And by that, I mean, are you a human female who has never had a sex change operation? Which, you know, is problematic.
Problematic AF, to say the least.
So that's bizarre. He's incredibly focused on that. Someone wrote in and had a good analogy where it's like, it's as if his hand is just hovering directly over his crotch, ready to start, you know, going at it as soon as she confirms that she actually is a woman. By this point in chat rooms, he would have sent her, you know, the dick pics by the first time she accepted his chat request. It seems so crazy that we're still doing this middle school, early 90s sort of dance around Everyone has grown up with this system. And
Right. But then her answer is quite shocking, right? As she becomes coy about that, a number of times describes how she's
repellent
and disfigured,
disabled and disfigured.
Yeah. So, pretty easy to throw him off the trail, but he is not dissuaded by that.
Nope. One of my favorite exchanges was, he says, "You can't stop me from emailing you." "Actually, I can. I can block you on my contact list." And that, like you said before, the romantic dialogue is just...
It just sings, doesn't it?
Flush Sonnet 18 and comparing you to a summer's day down the toilet. It's oh my God. Well, on the spot, do you think she's a woman or not?
Yeah, she has to be. I mean, it has to be.
It's been built up so much by this point in time that it would...
Yeah, I assume I'm going to lay my cards on the table. I assume H is a plant or something. I don't know. There's some twist with him, but I assume that she's the real deal because I can't imagine this guy depriving himself of his own fantasy. So, yeah, I believe she's even hotter than he says. Like, I was ready to accept her as a slightly stout woman with big breasts, but she was actually stately and Amazonian with big breasts or whatever he's going to. Finally reveal.
Right. But yeah, so then they just start hanging out and doing these weird quests. Like they go to the Goonies planet, which like I at this point in time I just wrote, there is no way that the IOI would not be winning this. Like there's not you've got these dipshits just sort of mooning at each other and going on these stupid things when they have a business full of 100 people doing these rigs, and they have 4 lines of a poem to analyze at this point in time. Like, what on earth is there? There's maybe 25 words that you can mine for meaning. And
yeah, I did not understand. I did not follow the thread of this. He says, like, but every day I would revisit the poem. Like, it's dumber than anything that Tolkien could have dreamt up for the. it's so dumb. Like, what are you analyzing about it? And then, yeah, they're wandering around. Completely drains the thing of any urgency. It's right. They really did just start a scene of where they're just trying on hats by going to other planets and pretending they're other things. Like, are you not on a quest here and your life is in danger? What the hell is going on?
And he says, she got all my jokes, which I flipped back. I was like, the things that he's quoted. Sure. Like that's the, that's what she's getting.
So he does think that he's making jokes. That's
I guess
that reflects back on the author then.
Yeah. Are we supposed to be thinking that this is good? Like, are we supposed to be sort of feeling bad for him? And I was reminded of the movie Her, Joaquin Phoenix and
is it a Charlie Kaufman joint?
So I think I watched that and, you know, a lot of people loved it and I couldn't get over how I couldn't relate to him. I didn't feel bad for him. I just felt that he was this sort of sad sack who didn't realize, you know, what we all knew the entire time, which is, what's his name? Wade is even aware of what's going on. He's like, even though I knew I shouldn't be doing this, like I was still falling in love with her. And it's like, I can't relate, man. Sorry. This is a bridge too far for me.
Yep. I mean, especially since I was thinking about that, his age is he's 17, but he has lived in a very dark world. Like he's got to be an old 17. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, his family is dead. His second family was incinerated in front of his eyes.
They abused him and stole his possessions.
Right.
So
he's
in a laundry room.
He's a little like he's a Dickensian street urchin where he's going to be a little wiser than his years. But
sure,
he just comes across as like a doofus idiot. He's just,
yes.
Just a dummy.
But yeah, so then they once they fall in love, they do these things together. They go out in public. They perform Meatloaf karaoke. And then they get the invitation to go to Ogden Morrow's birthday party, which he doesn't want to go to, but he decides that it's the only way he could avoid looking like a total wuss is to show up in public and party down with all these other virtual avatars.
At a place that he makes clear now, he is available yes. to be killed and or identified and or both, whatever, you know. Yes, this sure. is a dangerous place, he says. He makes
it's a bizarre situation for the guy to make the place he has his annual gathering, a place where people can get hurt or hurt each other. Like, that seems like a strange decision on behalf of the guy.
He makes it sort of a toss-off thing, like that's what kind of gives it its punk cred or something, you know, something like that. Like, it's, isn't it cool that you can go to this place and actually get killed?
Sure. Yeah, that's what I think every time I go to the, you know, the bad bowling alley in town. I'm like, ooh, someone might break a bottle over my head at this place.
Right. And then the Edge. Description of this place, man, where to start? Do you have any thoughts on this, Connor?
He arrives in his car, which, you know, I guess if you're this far in enjoying it, this is like red meat to you. His car is a combination of Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, Buckaroo Banzai, and Knight Rider.
Yep.
And he says that it's my time traveling, ghost busting, night riding, matter penetrating DeLorean had already become my avatar's trademark.
Yep.
And so that sums it up in a T, is that his trademark is just a bunch of other people's better trademarks all sort of mashed up together.
I also noted that as a writer, he couldn't just say, at first, I considered making it this vehicle, huh? Then I considered this vehicle, huh? But in the end, I settled on the classic. You know what I mean? Like, he just mashes them together for no reason whatsoever. It's got to look awful. I mean, neither thing will stick out of the three. No, nobody, everyone will go, what is that hideous monster thing?
Right. And I want to just assume that every time he's going to mention Ghostbusters, it's a reference to the 2015 Kristen Wiig.
Of course.
That's how I choose to interpret it, because I bet this guy had to publicly state that he liked that movie, but I bet that a lot of the people who read his book were probably the ones who were fists clenched.
Burning with resentment. Yeah.
Yes.
Fingers flying over the keys.
Right. But yeah, so the planet, I didn't jot down anything specific about the planet because I just wrote down like, oh, so it's like the that wildly unpopular scene in the second Matrix movie.
Yeah, I just noted that the descriptions of when he started dancing with her. So he talked about how they had to dress up their avatars, right? And disguise themselves in certain situations. So she asked him to dance. He's like, oh, I don't dance. Except that he bought the Travoltra app earlier, which just about made me hang myself. My wife had to take the rope off the beam and actually save my life after that. Yes. But his legs were spinning wildly or something, and she was very impressed. It's like, what? Why would anyone? What are you talking about? It's not him. We live in this world. We know this now.
Her eyes lit up in surprise and delight at his software, at his downloaded wares software. Delighting her.
Right. So she has a hell of a rig, too, that her eyes can do that. But then she turns into a mermaid in the middle of it and swims through this zero-G dance floor or whatever. So what was the point of dressing up your avatars if you can just midstream just turn into a mermaid? I don't understand.
I just maybe to inspire potential fetish artwork on DeviantArt of her as a mermaid. I really don't. And then everyone else starts doing it too. So everyone else has the capability to turn into lava lamp things.
I also enjoyed how as they walked around, and this just had to be, you could just see him mopping the sweat off his brow as he was writing about how the crowds were parting at the sight of him and Artemis.
And like the murmurs like just went around.
Yeah, it was like when in the days when Johnny Carson was at his coolest, like he'd go to a Hollywood party and people would be like, Johnny, you know, this is what he's picturing himself as, the coolest guy on the planet.
Right, with his matchbox car in his pocket of his DeLorean Ghostbusters vehicle.
Right, a side note there, I loved how he described how it had, he was worried at first about parking it there in this dangerous spot, but then it had a lot of anti-burglary things on it. It had like explosives and things.
Explosive things.
However, not a problem on this planet. Well, then why the hell did you describe that if you're going to put
like
it in your pocket, dummy?
Yes. But yeah, and it's sort of all dancing like mermaids and swirling around. And I wrote down, there's no way that the IOI who are working around the clock and killing people would not win this competition. There's nothing he's done that has not been, has given any sort of ability that they would not have, and they're not taking time to do this nonsense.
Like, right. We assume that Nolan Sorrento is not throwing his own bashes with wizards and mermaids. And
right.
He's pretty much drilling down on the, hey, let's just go get the $1 billion and mop this thing up, guys.
Right. So then he tells her, I love you. She freaks out. She must have seen that coming. She's already kissed him. They've spent a lot of time together, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, she kissed him, and he does note, like, as I asked in an earlier chapter,
yes.
What does that entail when you're just, and he said, like, which didn't, I couldn't feel anything, of
right.
course, but nevertheless was like the coolest thing. So what was it? You looked closer at her avatar. That's about
yeah, you
all.
Sort of, you merge into her face like you do when you walk through a wall in Doom, where it just sort of.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, so then my favorite part of his sort of freak out when she's like, we can't do this, we can't do this. He goes, is it because I told you I've never had a real girlfriend and that I'm a virgin? Which is like, whoa, easy there, man. Like, you know, I don't think that's part of it. And like, that's just a weird thing to shout out on the dance floor
yeah,
and to tell her in the first place.
And what does that mean in the virtual world? I don't know. Like,
hey,
is there a different meaning to it? How would you, like, she lives in, you don't even know where she lives. So what does that mean?
Right. IRL virgin or,
right.
You know, because I imagine that nobody is a virgin in the real world, because that's just got to be like, you know, what you do in the first 30 minutes of showing up there.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So she freaks out and gets the hell out of Dodge after the people show up and, you know, the wizard fights him off, and that just did nothing for me.
Yeah, so his romance, which started up improbably and quickly, ended just as quickly. So zero tension there. Quickly dissipated whatever there was with his romance. And that's where we are, right? She's just gone, and he's left high and dry.
Yep. But she does take the time to look back at him, which in the movies we all know if they look back, then you're telling me there's a chance.
Exactly. So,
yeah, that's where we are.
Yeah. So I cannot wait to see what happens. I cannot wait to find out who Artemis is.
Yeah. And we got to, you know, we didn't even touch about the quatrain, which is building on the Captain Crunch and the whistle. So,
oh my gosh, we will touch on that. Let's mop it up in our odds and ends.
Okay.
Which is pretty
nice.
Good.
Yeah. But before we get to odds and ends, let's, got a lot of entries here, but let's hit the dumb sentence of the week.
Let's do it.
Sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital letter is big, big, big. A sentence ends with a period or an exclamation or a question mark. A sentence always ends.
Well, it's good to know what a sentence is. Always good to hear what it is. And there were some doozies in this one. Connor, why don't you go first? I think we noted some of our nominees, but we are now here to the winner. So what do you have for us?
Yeah. Well, a couple people sent them in, so let's touch on those. Melody and Scott both sent in the same one. It's when he says, I could feel it deep in the soft, chewy caramel center of my being.
Yeah, that was towards the end, and I considered it, but I'd already picked my my winner. So
He says, I'm in love with your mind, with the person you are. I couldn't care less about the packaging. That was from Scott K., which he spent the entire chat log focusing on the packaging of whether she's a
right.
whether she's a woman or not, which is, it's just a way to get in, I guess, a Star Trek, Star Wars figure reference.
Yep.
Sherry sent in one about the club. It made our avatars slowly rotate around the club's invisible central axis, like motes of dust floating around inside a snow globe. And motes of dust are not what floats around inside a snow globe. It's snow or glitter, traditionally.
Right.
It's a very strange twist on a shitty metaphor. And Taylor wrote in, and this is as the stacks are collapsing and hundreds of people and children are dying. These horrific sounds continued for what seemed like a very long time.
I had that note and scrubbed it because I had made it with one of his other things, but I was angered at that one. You're the writer. What do you mean what seemed like?
Seems like that was
you're
something
the only,
you touched on
last
week.
You're our witness to it. You're my only witness to it.
All right. Well, I've got one too. And do you want me to go first?
Go ahead.
Okay. My dumb sentence of the week was when he and H are wrapping up their chat room. Not chat link. session.
Yes, please, people. Come on.
And for the second time, they bump fists, but this time he describes it. We bump fists like the Wonder Twins activating their powers. It sort of sums it up in a nutshell. He just says something, and then he adds a reference that adds nothing to your understanding or mental image of it. It is purely just to compare it to some garbage from the 1980s.
Check in the box.
Yes.
There you go, people.
Dumb sentence of the week for me. What have you got?
Dumb sentence of the week for me comes from, if you're following along, page 176. This is him in the first person. I was watching a collection of vintage 80s cereal commercials when I paused to wonder why cereal manufacturers no longer included toy prizes inside every box.
Oh, my God. Yep.
Holy cow.
It's can you do that as Andy Rooney?
Here we go again. This is the this should be the opening sentence and then the closing one.
Yes.
I was watching a collection of vintage 80s cereal commercials when I paused to wonder why cereal manufacturers no longer included toy prizes inside box.
That's exactly what it is. I did not plan to ask you that beforehand, but that's...
Yes, that works quite well, doesn't it?
Oh, my God. And that is... On the heels, that is like the next thing after the stacks collapse. That's
what he was doing. And that
we said last time, like that's how he solves that puzzle. Like that's his moment of clarity.
Yeah, it's about that person who made a 2600 hertz tone or something with a Captain Crunch whistle or something and stole long distance back in the day. Whew.
That's relatively interesting. But that is the sort of thing that as your average non 20 and 30 year old dude reads this, like, my mom would like to probably know a bit more about that. Cause that's like the stuff that made Da Vinci Code entertaining is you read these things, you learn something about symbols or Da Vinci. And that just sort of glossed over with that. It's like, he has that idea. It's like, oh sure. That thing moving along. Like,
yeah. I mean,
puzzle solved.
That could be the opening of a book that then talked about, That could be the intro. It's a vivid description of how that guy came up with that would then lead into a thing about coding and all of this could be an actual thing. But no, yeah. Leave it there on the floor for you guys. That's not the interesting part. Wonder Twins is the interesting part.
Yes, there we go. We've got only two Star Wars references this time. He says he visited every neglected dwelling he could think of, which includes the Lars homestead on Tatooine. Where, as we know, the Lars family farmed moisture.
That's right.
And then when he gets to the rave, DJ R2-D2 is playing a New Order song with droid sounds dubbed in.
Yep. Put the rope over the beam when I read that as well.
The only odds and sod I had was I read something the other day, I guess it was a article about a new NBA video game where they're like, how do you screw this up this badly? And I read it and their description of sort of the game was reminded me of Ready Player One, because they said that when you make your own character in this game, you are in a small hub world called the Neighborhood. And mm-hmm. He says the idea, I'm sure, was to give 2K18 its own World of Warcraft-ish staging area where players would love to spend time wandering around, admiring their customization and truly feeling part of a basketball-centered world. What they built was PlayStation Home. It's a pointless mess that forces the player to run through a soulless corporate theme park to fulfill even the most basic off-court action. Want to pay for a haircut? Run to the barber. Want to buy new shoes? Drag your ass over to Foot Locker. And while you're running, there's almost nothing to do, since while the neighborhood is populated with other real players' avatars, you can't really interact with them. So it's like they described his world of like, I could run at 4 miles an hour and I would have to travel here in real time. And they're right. Like, yeah, that's in a video game and it really sucks.
Right. A video game from many years before.
Yes.
In so, his fiction.
I thought that was fun.
My odds and sods, we kind of covered a lot of them, but I had... Chuck made another appearance.
Several.
Hairy knuckled Chuck, again, several appearances, as does Flibberty Gibbet.
Oh, God, yeah.
So she talked again about how she's a Flibberty Gibbet, which nobody uses that word, obviously, anymore. Yeah. It is in the song, How Do You Handle a Problem? How Do You Solve a Problem Like Maria in the Sound of Music, where it was, I'm sure, used for comic effect. yes, because nobody knew what then. It was. Yeah, so yeah. It was used to sort of make it quaint in a very comic way. And then I said I wouldn't mention it, but I will. H's Cheshire grin makes another appearance. So
it does. But when he shows up when all the people have died, he has a grim expression.
He does.
But then soon after that, he's Cheshire grinning again.
And then my final thing is that he does have a time problem again, because he watched 52 episodes of the Space Giants while wolfing down corn chips and taking notes. And then later, watching every single episode of Whiz Kids. Would you guess that Whiz Kids would be an early 80s TV show about a teenage hacker? If so, you are correct.
Yeah. All right, yes.
Yes, so... So he's doing this while the quest is going on again.
Exactly.
Again. So while the other Sorrento and his giant team of efficient people are getting it done. So
and those don't contain the answers. Those are just, you know, pointless research that.
Oh yeah, this is not research. This is this is sidetracking. This is shopping for tennis shoes while you're supposed to be writing your term paper. There's nothing happening with this.
Well,
yeah, so that was a slog. So we made it through. Well done, yeah. Connor.
And so, yeah, the next thank you very much. It's, I'm interested to see what happens next, because I enjoy it, even though I'm not enjoying it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, I go back to what Gregory Peck says in The Guns of Navarone. He says, "You're in it now, up to your neck." And so there's nothing we can do. We're in it now, up to our neck.
Nice. So all of you are in it up to your next two. So keep on reading with us. We really appreciate it. We got a lot of great emails this week. Some new people reviewed us on iTunes, which was awesome, and on Facebook, which is still cool. And please submit dumb sentences of the week and any other thoughts, because a lot of times people pointed out stuff I didn't realize this week, like that 42nd floor thing. And I don't know, there's a couple other things people. Oh, his computer hacker avatar name. And then the assignment for next week is going to be read through chapter 24, and that's page 240 in our edition. 50 pages, but yeah.
That's a lot of pages.
But I think we can break us down into like four more episodes, because that seems reasonable to me, right?
Yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah. It's just my own personal resistance to it.
Five more hours of talking about this garbage seems like enough. And then we have to see the movie probably when that comes out.
That's going to be the special episode.
Yes, all right.
Very special, 372 pages. So, I appreciate everyone following along. This is a lot of fun, and this week yielded a lot of stuff. Thanks for helping us break it all down, people. We will see you next time on 372 pages. We'll never get back.
I'll take a short walk to my office now.